You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
According to African Business Magazine, the total mineral wealth of the Democratic Republic of the Congo is estimated to be $24 trillion. That is equivalent to the GDP of Europe and the United States combined. The DRC has the world's largest reserves of cobalt and significant quantities of the world's diamonds, gold, and copper. This makes the DRC potentially the richest country in the world. However, the Congo also ranks 176th on the UN's Human Development Index, with a GDP of about $300 per person. This odd contrast between mineral wealth and private poverty has led journalist John Lasker to call mining in the Congo a curse. It's the mining that leads to the violence and the instability and the corruption. And now a Canadian company, Banro, wants to develop the last great unmined gold deposits in the Congo. And an estimated $10 billion in gold is the prize. John Lasker has been following this story, and I talked to him several weeks ago, and I began by asking him to tell me how mining by Western companies has affected this region over the last several decades.
Well, it's been a terrible curse. They call it a resource curse here. They have illegally smuggled resources out of this area with the help of violent rebel groups. These violent rebel groups will force the Congolese at a low wage, actually, but they will force the Congolese into mining for gold, cassiterite, coltan, copper. Then the militias, they'll smuggle the resources out of these regions. A lot of these mining companies aren't actually within the eastern Congo, but they have made agreements off the books, secret agreements with these rebel groups to purchase the resources, purchase Congolese resources that, again, were illegally removed and mined out of the Congo. And then the mining companies, I mean, they make millions off moving the resources out of Central Africa. It's an industry that they don't really care or where the resources are from or how the resources have been extracted, whether or not people were killed for these resources. As long as they get the resources and are able to move them out into the world markets, that's all that matters to a lot of these companies. The UN, in 2001, 2002, they did an investigation on these Western mining companies that were illegally smuggling resources out of the Congo, and it was like 100 different companies, Canada, Belgium, United States. They asked the United States, they asked the Canadian government to prosecute some of these companies that had illegally smuggled the resources out of the Congo, but the United States, Canada, Belgium, the governments, they basically turned their shoulders to the UN.
Can you tell us a little about Banro?
Yes, Banro is based in Toronto. They have had mining concessions in eastern Congo for 10, 15 years and perhaps longer. They are currently right now in an exploratory stage in the eastern Congo. Their gold mines there, it's in a territory of about 200 kilometers, and they've told investors that there's a possibility that $10 billion worth of gold could be extracted within the next 15 years. This has caused kind of a stir in Toronto, the Toronto Stock Exchange. They've acquired a lot of investors who are interested. And the Toronto Stock Exchange, by the way, has become the leading generator for mining refunds on Earth, in the globe, around the globe.
And now the area that Banro is interested in Africa, that is the eastern Congo. Can you tell us a little about that area?
First of all, there's not a lot of infrastructure there. It's very rugged. There's many volcanoes, thick jungles. What is interesting is that there are millions of Congolese, poor Congolese, living in this region. Many of them have to turn to mining to make a living. But because of the mining and because of the resources, this region has been cursed by invading militias and rebel groups who are desperate for these mines and resources. Again, it's been unstable basically since the Rwandan genocide in 1994. Rwanda, which is the Congo's neighbor to the east, after the genocide, some of the remnants of the Hutus had to flee into this area, and this caused tremendous problems for the Congolese. But at the same time, during the same time, seeing that there's all these minerals and resources in this region, other proxy militias from Uganda and Rwanda invaded, and thus they fought over these mines. NGOs estimate that 5 million people perished during the last 10 years since this resource war started in North Kivu, roughly after the genocide of Rwanda.
Now, this Rwandan force, I understand that they are called the FDLR, is that correct?
Correct. One of the major militias that have a tremendous influence in this area is the FDLR, the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda. They are the remnants of the Hutus. They're about 6,000 strong. They're well-armed. They financially, they survive off smuggling resources out of North Kivu and South Kivu. And basically, my sources tell me, one being Hans Ramkema, he runs an NGO from the Netherlands, he tells you that Banro's mines are basically within the territory that is controlled by the FDLR.
And if Banro was going to start mining in this area, practically speaking, are they going to need to come to some sort of an agreement with the FDLR?
No, well, that's a good question, Sean. Hans Ramkema tells me that his opinion is that Banro has no choice but to make an off-the-books agreement with the FDLR if they want to successfully mine gold in South Kivu. He believes they've already made an agreement, and thus that's why Banro really hasn't had a problem there during the last couple of years during this exploratory stage. The FDLR right now, they're being hunted basically by Congolese forces. Also, there's a UN peacekeeping force there that's also after the FDLR. So this area where Banro is mining, it's very unstable. It's a tremendous risk. They've even talked about it that it's a risk for them, but apparently the stakes are that high.
If they have come to an agreement, or they do come to an agreement in the future, what would the nature of that agreement look like?
It wouldn't be any agreement that would be considered legitimate in the eyes of the Congolese government, considering the Congolese government is trying to oust the FDLR from these regions. So the agreement would be off the books. It would probably, if Banro were to make an agreement with the FDLR, that they would allow the FDLR to mine on their gold territories and basically illegally smuggle gold out of the country there. Again, the FDLR is a rebel group which had their hands involved with the genocide in Rwanda. Some of their leadership is wanted by the U.S. government, is wanted by the U.N. for basically murdering hundreds of thousands of people.
And how does the smuggling work exactly?
The smuggling works basically that Western mining metal brokers, they'll be outside the Congo, and they'll be waiting in some town, possibly in Uganda or even Rwanda, and the FDLR, they'll hire the Congolese to mine at a very low wage, and then they'll secretly smuggle the gold through trading routes or through pathways that they control in this province, and these trading routes they go outside South Kivu into Uganda or Rwanda, and there the metal brokers, they will sell the illegal goods to the metal brokers.
Now, what about the Congolese government? What role do they play in all of these mining activities and these mining operations?
Well, the concessions that were made with Banro were made about 5 years ago, and so the Congolese have given the Banro the permission to mine here. In this agreement, they were given a tax break to start out for the first few years. So the Congolese are allowing Banro to mine in these areas. But again, the problem is stability, whether the Congolese can protect Banro. But again, you're talking about a very remote area that has hardly any infrastructure. In fact, Banro, they fly into their mines via helicopter. So it's a situation where even if they were having difficulty with the FDLR, the Congolese may not be able to help Banro.
Now, in 2004, I understand there was a situation involving a Canadian mining company in Congo. Can you tell us a little about that?
Correct. The company was Anvil, and this story came to me by Jamie Neen. He runs Canada's Mining Watch. It's a nonprofit. And Jamie told me that in 2004, Anvil, near one of their mines, was a small village. And this village had an uprising, apparently some type of protest in regards to the mine. Anvil, seeing that possibly this protest in this village might disrupt their mining, their ability to mine, they asked the Congolese government to assist them in putting down this protest. And what happened, and this has been well documented, was that the Congolese forces moved in this village, and as Jamie Neen says it, raped and pillaged and murdered basically 60 civilians. And Anvil says that they did not try to help the Congolese force when they tried to put down the protest. But again, Jamie Neen, there has been documented proof that Anvil allowed the Congolese force to use trucks and other logistics to put down this protest. And in fact, Jamie says that Anvil's trucks were used to remove dead bodies of the Congolese.
Are there no international guidelines for companies operating in war zones like the Eastern Congo?
There are, Sean. They are guidelines set by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development based in France. But the problem is, the Canadian government and the U.S. government, like many Western governments, are not bound to enforce these guidelines. And that's one reason why they basically turn a blind eye to many of these metal brokers and mining companies that are working in the Congo.
And how do you see this unfolding in the Congo, John?
It's fairly cut and dry. If Banro doesn't invest in Congolese infrastructure in those regions, and they don't build roads, build schools, perhaps a hospital, if they don't pay a fair wage, a living wage to the Congolese that they hired to mine for the gold, then they're going to have problems with these militias. If they're not investing in infrastructure, these rebel groups, they have a powerful ability to recruit for saying that, look, this Western mining company is taking gold right out from under, taking our money, our gold, our resources right out from under our feet. So it could end up in a total disaster if Banro doesn't take those billions of dollars they're going to make over the next 10, 15 years and their investors, the billions of dollars, and put that back into the community.
And that was John Lasker in an interview recorded several weeks ago. John Lasker is a freelance journalist based in Columbus, Ohio. His article on mining in the Congo appeared in the November-December issue of Canadian Dimension magazine. And you can find that article by going to canadiandimension.com.